Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Del challenges the status quo, questions everything, and empowers you to return to your core beliefs to make your life better. If you're ready to hear the truth and get your roadmap to the lifestyle you really want, the next hour will change your life. And now, your host, self-made millionaire, national award-winning investor of the year, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. With me here today to help work through some issues is Mr. Don Rao from Dallas, Texas, one of our multifamily mentors. Don, welcome to the show.
Hey, Del. Thanks. Great to be here.
You know, we were talking the other day, and you brought up a topic I thought was pretty interesting, maybe worth doing a radio show on. And that was your discussion that you were bringing up about how you see the normal business model completely different than the real estate business model. And then you went further and even explained that it wasn't just the real estate model. It was the lifestyles real estate model is completely different than the normal business model. And I think that you're right on that, to the extent that even the people that do real estate do it the old-fashioned business model. And that's why 9 out of 10 businesses fail within the first 5 years of business. If it's possible, where would you like to pick that conversation up at? Because I thought it was an interesting conversation when you were presenting it before.
Well, I guess we could build out the framework of a traditional small business. Tends to be kind of the same MO over and over. I see people that are small business owners, and they're real proud of their accomplishments, and they should be. But we have to understand we're just pretty much buying a job, right? I know when I was doing it, instead of having one boss, I had over 100 bosses that were called customers. And, you know, that model is typically on a small business. The owner is heavily involved in running the day-to-day operations, which is totally different than what we do here at Lifestyles.
Yeah, your statement of it being a turnkey business, that was interesting. Explain that one to people.
Yeah, I call a small business like that, where it's owner-operator, mom-and-pop, I call it a turnkey business, and the reason for that is typically if they're not there to turn the key, there is no business. So it's you know, get up, go to work, unlock the door, get the cash register open, money in the drawer, ready for business that day. And, of course, we don't do it that way in the apartment business, particularly the way we do it here at Lifestyles. I know that some people that own multifamily, because you know, we end up buying these properties from them quite a bit, and their operation is usually, you know, they're recording all of their activity. If you're lucky, it's on a spreadsheet. If you're not lucky, it's in a shoebox. So, you know, we've gotten away from that, and we run it actually like a business, and we don't participate in the day to day. I'm not on property picking up trash or showing people units to rent. That's just not the way we do it. And night and day difference in the lifestyle's way of doing multifamily and the traditional small business owner.
You know, you brought up a point I thought was reminding me of something. Back, I bought two apartment complexes from one guy who's about 70 years old, and he was just getting to the point where it was too much for him to operate anymore, and his son wanted nothing to do with it because of the way his dad did it. The way he worked, and it was just a disastrous problem. The son wanted no part of it, so he had to get rid of the properties because his son, when he thought was going to inherit them and take them over, wouldn't do it. And I talked to the guy for months about buying the place, and he would never give me his financials. And finally, I just got mad at him. I said, look, either you're going to give me the financials so I can get a loan on this place, or you're not. So he pulls out a little spiral notebook, the kind that would fit in your, you know, your upper pocket of a shirt, and he handed it to me. And I said, what is this? He goes, that's my financials. And I opened it up, and all he had in this book was how much money had been collected. Each page was, okay, we got $10,000 in the bank on Monday, the, you know, the first, and we got, you know, $5,000 in the bank Tuesday the second, right down the line for the whole month, and that was his total collections for the month. He had no expenses, no bills, no nothing. And I said, this is financials. He goes, that's all you need. And I said, what do you mean that's all I need? He said, well, you know, if you buy this property, are you going to keep my staff? I said, probably not. So he says, you're probably going to figure out what your own payroll is. He goes, if you buy this property from me, you're going to pay the same property taxes I pay, or are they going to change when you have a higher sales price? And I said, well, it's probably going to change. He said, well, about insurance, are you going to take my insurance, or are you going to go get your own insurance? You can't keep mine. And he goes, yeah, I'm going to get my own insurance, so you're going to know what that's going to be. He said, pretty much every expense you're going to have, you're going to create, and it's going to be up to you what you want them to be. So there's really no need to know what mine are. And, you know, I sat there, Don, for a second, dumbfounded, and then I realized it. It really is true. The only thing that's really important is how much money can the property bring in, and then everything else can be calculated from beyond that. But the point was, he never did financials. I don't even know how he does his taxes. You know, he probably lied on them. But you're right. These people out there running these businesses with absolutely no business acumen at all. Just tremendous. Most of them are working long hours, too, wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I was kind of doing a little research on this after we had talked about it initially. And, you know, most business owners typically work way more hours than their employees. They, again, it's that back to buying a job, it's really where they've landed. You know, they're so involved in the business, and they get that do-it-yourself mentality. I know I had it before coming to Lifestyles. I had a pickup, and, man, I knew where everything was at Home Depot and Lowe's, and I would go in there, get the stuff in the morning, and haul it out to the property. And one day I woke up and kind of realized that I could accomplish way more by writing checks and giving them scopes of work and letting them do it than I possibly could running around trying to save a few bucks here and there, and then not getting the best results on whatever project it was I was working on. It's much better left to the hands of the professionals. They have all the tools. You know, I usually meet them at the property and review what they're going to do for that day, and then I leave. And I come back at the end of the day and see what kind of progress they've made. I figured I could do four or five projects like that versus tying up my time just overseeing one.
Yeah, well, I can relate to that. When I first started, I remember, you know, doing my own make-readies in my houses when I first started. And it's the natural concept that the only way you've ever been able to make money in your life is through a job. The only way you've ever been able to keep money was to not spend it. And you get to the point where when you come out of corporate America, you come out of a job environment, even if it's not corporate America, the only thing you've ever had control of in your life are your expenses. So to you, if I do it, not only do you have that belief that I'm the only one that can do it right, which is a very prevalent belief out there, you know, if it's going to be, it's up to me type of thing. But also, right, You're thinking that a penny saved is a penny earned. I mean, you think of all the things you've been taught your whole life about frugality. And when you get into business, that's the first thing you want to do is you start with frugality. And it's really the death nail in the coffin of most businesses. The other thing I notice, and you had mentioned when we were discussing this, I know this to be very true. Not only do they have the do-it-yourself mentality that I can do it, I can save the money to do it, but I've noticed that beginners buy the worst properties out there. And I guess, it's, you know, I can think of one or two or three reasons why that might be, but I see it to be true. When people first start, they buy the cheapest thing they can buy. You know, hey, man, I gotta buy something I can afford. And so they buy stuff that's really in bad condition. They don't realize how bad the condition is. And then they don't go in there with a plan to do the renovations up front. And they just sort of kind of waddle through this mess of stuff that keeps going wrong over and over and over again. Never thinking from the beginning that, boy, I should bring some money in to fix all this stuff. Talk about undercapitalization, how devastating that is to a startup business.
Yeah, that can be. Not so much for the real estate, at least not the way we do it, but yeah, very, very much so in a small business, whatever you're doing, making cupcakes or cleaning people's office buildings like I was. you tend to just focus on the amount of money you need to get, you know, to get the door open, to get your shelves stocked. Beyond that, there's not much of a, it's all reactionary pretty much beyond that point.
With me here today is Don Rao, a mentor out of the Dallas area, is one of our national mentors for multifamily. And Don has a discussion that he's put together for us today about the difference between running your property like a small mom and pop business person and or a more traditional method of doing it compared to the way we do it here at Lifestyles, which makes it completely different. Don, where do you want to pick that back up at? Do you think small business people put a lot of time into planning?
Oh, it's not that they don't put time into planning. It's the time frame that they plan for. Usually it's seat of the pants, month-to-month kind of planning. There's not typically a longer-term plan in place. And, I think that's just because they get bogged down in making sure that, you know, the business is open and functioning and they're right in the middle of the operation. Yeah, the Lifestyles is totally different. We're talking about the, even in real estate, kind of get away from just the small business owner. But even in real estate, we see owners that come in, and I know we had a property and contractor a while back, and it was about 30 units. And what appeared to be, you know, the guy owned several properties. And so I thought he would be, you know, fairly sophisticated. So we go to start submitting financials for the lender, and he doesn't have anything. And he sends me a spreadsheet, and it's his rent roll. And I said, well, do you have, what about the month before? And what this guy was doing is he was taking an Excel spreadsheet, and every month he would go in there and he would change it. Instead of saving the month before, he'd just clear all the data and enter in that month. So he had no record of what he had done the previous year. But, that tends to be typical. But when we take them over, we set them up like a business. We have a budget that goes on at least for the first year. We're well capitalized. We make sure that everything's in place to be successful. And we are.
So as you work through this with people, do you ever have anybody, you know, you've been mentoring for quite a while now, have you ever run into somebody who won't listen, won't make changes, won't come over to our side, our way of thinking?
There's a few, but I think we've done such a good job of educating them before they get to that point that it's not near what it used to be. They have the expectation that more correlates with the education material. So it's not as big of a problem at all. We're finding that this new education platform that came out last year is really, really helping everyone to go at it with the right mindset. And, that usually translates to more success.
You know, yesterday I took on an article about a guy who is saying that stocks are better than real estate. And the guy who sent me the article, after hearing me do the radio show, sent me another email saying that, you know, I've been talking to this guy. I've been emailing him back and forth with him and trying to get him to, you know, understand that he doesn't know what he's talking about. And which I didn't know when I did the radio show about him. I think you might have heard that radio show yesterday, stimulated the conversation today.
Yeah.
But when a guy sent me his email, I said, can you send me those emails? It was really interesting to see that this guy didn't understand about depreciation. He didn't even know that you could depreciate your real estate. He owned a property free and clear, so he had to pay the property taxes. He had to pay income taxes, and he lived in California, so he had not only federal income tax, but state income taxes on the income. And he had no depreciation and no mortgage. So he was just getting killed by this property that in California, I'm sure, you know, probably rents for $3,000 or $4,000 a month. And he was getting all that money and paying taxes, and he hated it. He thought it was terrible. But the guy had no idea about depreciation. He had no idea about the fact you could refinance the money out and put a mortgage on there and lower your tax basis. It was an amazing, amazing email to see. And yet this guy's writing articles on finances. And what was interesting is that the member who was writing to this guy was telling him all this stuff. And the guy was like dumbfounded. You what? How? You know, it's just amazing. So how many people do you think, not our members, but other people going to business, Don, don't have any idea what they're doing? I mean, zip.
In real estate or just in business in general? General small businesses?
I think a lot of them
don't have any idea. You know, it tends to be a trade that they've somehow mastered or perfected, and then they think they can go out and do it on their own, which they probably can. But there's more to running a business than there is to having a job, and that job mentality tends to follow them over into the small business arena. And, you know, you can be the greatest plumber in the world, but if you can't keep your books and meet payroll and handle your taxes, you can be sunk pretty fast. I know there's probably a journal in Houston, but the Dallas Business Journal, in the back of it, it lists all of the tax obligations that are unpaid. And far and away, most of those are the payroll taxes. You know, the employer pays his help, and then end of the month he doesn't have money to pay his FICA and his Medicare on the wages he's paid. So I think that's pretty typical. And of course, what we teach is avoids all of those haphazards of the small business.
You know, that is true. The number one IRS lawsuit out there is for payroll taxes. Believe it or not, That's the number one thing that takes businesses down. They don't realize they have to pay those quarterly estimated income taxes and payroll taxes every month that they put out of payroll. So it's a bizarre situation. A person that does my lawn care, and the lady that runs the lawn care business had bought it from the guy who owned it before. She was kind of like his office manager type of thing. And she bought this business from the guy, not understanding that she was going to have to pay him to buy the business, so she was facilitating an owner finance agreement where he still owned everything until she paid it all off, and if she didn't pay it all off, he was going to take it back from her. She paid three or four times what the asset was worth because all she really bought was a bunch of old junky equipment that were paid in full in his, you know, from him. But she had to buy that equipment from him along with buy his business from him. And so she had a basis to start with out of the blocks of losing money. And she lost money for a year on this business before I sat down with her and talked to her about it. And said, you know, you have to understand what you're doing here. You know, you need to just break this deal off. I said, give me your contract. I'll read your contract with you. And I read it. And, you know, I could see that the contract was so misrepresented, it was easy for her to get out of the deal. But she didn't understand that she was losing money for a year thinking she's buying a business when all she really bought was a book of work. In other words, here's 20 yards we're taking care of. You're buying that plus all my old junky equipment. And I think a lot of people, you know, have no idea, zero, zip idea how to run a business when they first get into it.
We'll take a short break. Be right back with the Del Wamsley Radio Show.
You're listening to the Del Wamsley Radio Show. Del will be right back with more life-changing principles in just a few minutes.
Stop waiting. Stop sitting around. Stop procrastinating. This is your time. Make it happen. Do it now. When's the best time? Now. People go, well, I don't know. It's going to crash. It's going to be better next year. I've got to listen to four more classes. I love guys come up to me and tell me, you know, I've been listening to you on the radio for 8 years now, right? I go, and you're not rich yet? Well, really, I'm thinking about joining next month. Do it now.
Learn the skills you need to retire with real estate in 5 years or less. Do it now. Register for the Lifestyles Unlimited free online workshop, lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Welcome back. Now here's some more unconventional wisdom to set you free from the man on a mission to retire America, one person at a time, Del Walmsley.
Welcome back to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. With me here today is Don Rao out of Dallas. And Don, you know, as we're sitting here talking about these small businesses, the traditional business model, you have to also think about the information process on small business. You know, in our group here, everybody shares everything, so that if you need to know how to do something, you need to know where to find something, you've got it at your fingertips, you know, pretty much 24/7 on almost, no, I would say everything. There's nothing that is held back from people to know. That's not the way it is with most small businesses, is it? I mean, most small businesses protect their information and hence don't get anybody else's information. Explain how that works.
Sure. Yeah, nobody wants to, whatever they're selling, they don't want to tell you what their basis is in it, that how much it costs them, what their markups are. They don't want to tell you what their sales figures are for the year. Sources of materials, usually that's guarded. The one that I like, though, is the secret sauce. You know, how many times you see these recipes where, you know, we've got this secret thing, you know, that we can't share with anyone. And I always, kind of my own little Donism, I guess, always say, you know, that we kind of admit that it's just Thousand Island dressing and we just set out to make the best we can. There's really no secrets. And within lifestyles, there's such a sharing of information that it's, there's very few obstacles that you'll come across in real estate that you can't sit in a room with members and find someone in that group has dealt with that problem before. And I've said the thing about lifestyles, and again, coming from a small business, family-owned business background, lifestyles to me was like entering a family business that was in its fifth or sixth generation. You know, that's the power that that lifestyles brings to the operation. And you know, the acquisition, disposition, everything that goes on in real estate, we have members that have been through those things many, many times over. So it's funny that, you know, you get several owners in a room and it turns into a competition, what they have done, and they're all trying to one-up one another. And out of that comes some really creative ways of handling problems that we face on day-to-day.
So you go through this and you're processing this as a mentor with someone. How do you get it across to them that they need to be open and sharing about everything? Is that all picked up from the radio show and from the two-day and all the initial processes? Are they pretty open by the time they get to you?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just the culture of within the group. The one of the number one things that I hear new members say, you know, somebody that's joined, they've been in a couple of months, they're just, you know, getting oriented with events and how the schedule flows, is that how open everyone is. You know, who would walk into a room and, you know, we do these road trips and those are really fun. And at the end of the day, we sit down, we have lunch together, maybe a couple of adult beverages, but just the sharing of information. But they kind of grasp that from being a new member. So it's not foreign by the time they get to the point where they're talking to one of us. It's, you know, they already have the amazement of, wow, I can't believe this. You know, I have friends I've known all my life, and I don't know their net worth. And here, this guy sitting across from me at lunch has already told me, you know, his net worth, his liquidity. You know, we're talking about doing deals together in the future. That's just the dynamics that the group brings. It's very exciting.
So that adds one more aspect to this whole equation. That is the ability to expand. I have a friend that owns a restaurant, and it's one of my favorite restaurants. I go there quite regularly. And every time I go there, the owner and his wife are there. One of the two or both of them are there, and their kids. And, you know, I've sat down with them many times and said, look, your restaurant is incredible, serves incredible food. We live way out in the middle of nowhere, an area that's growing rapidly. There's not very many good restaurants you can go to, and every one we do go to are completely packed because there's not very many of them. So why don't you expand? We'll even put up the money for you to expand if you'll expand your business. We're going as partners. I'll put up the money, you do the thing. And he looked at me and says, no. Now, we're looking to get out of business. We're tired. We work 60, 80 hours a week. We thought the kids would grow up and be able to take over the business for us, but the kids, the apple may not fall far from the tree, but it sure can roll a long distance in this day and age. They have different ideas. They don't want to work that hard or that long. And the opportunity for these people to expand is just would be incredible. I mean, they've been an incredibly good product that everybody I ever take there just raves on the place. But there they are. They have no ability to expand because they can't expand themselves. Whereas, my gosh, how many apartment complexes do people own? What would you say of the lead investors, Don? And you can make up a number. We're not going to hold you to any number. But the lead investors, a first-time guy owns one apartment complex. You look all the way to Curtis, and Curtis has 40 apartment complexes. What do you think the average is amongst the lead investors? Would it be 2, 3, 5? What would you say the average number of businesses owned is by these different lead investors?
I would say average is hard to tell, but I would say somewhere between 3 and 5 on average per lead. I know that particularly if you're self-managing, that 5 is kind of the point where it all starts coming together, making sense, and you get some economies of scale in all aspects of the operation. But I'd say 3 to 5. And that's usually just a self-limit. They just limit themselves to that, but for whatever reason. You could do more.
Well, the reason is that they don't want to scale up. Yeah, they don't want to scale up to the next level. And that's what it really takes. You have to scale up either by producing a larger management company with more integral parts, or you have to go to completely another management company to where you're not a part of any of the business activity other than the asset management part of it. And some people don't want to do that because they don't want to let go of the control of having the ownership of the management company. And some people don't want to do it because they don't want to scale up their own management company. And let's face it, by the time you own 3 to 5 apartment complexes, you're making probably 10 grand a month from each property. You're probably making 30 to 50 grand a month, and that pretty much satiates most people. So, but the point I'm getting to is the opportunity to grow here in this business the way we do it is much greater than you go out there and you own one electrical company. You're not going to set up another electrical company. You may not even want to expand a book of business. No. You know what I mean? It's just too much work on this. So let's see if we're going to change topics. We got only got 3 minutes left on this segment here, and then we got one more segment left. I wanted to see if there's anything else you wanted to talk about because you've been busy and you haven't been on in a long time. Is there any other things that are coming up lately that really have captured your attention?
Anytime we can get out on property with members outside of our home offices, we've had a lot of out-of-state members. We exchange emails a lot, giving us input, ideas. It's really great. I love it.
With me here today is Don Rao, a multifamily mentor out of the Dallas market. Don, I'm going to take a different direction here for the last segment, and I'm going to bring up some information that I brought up in the show a couple of days ago, which is population growth. I don't know what you guys are doing in Dallas. Whatever it is, if you're giving away free money or, free drugs or something. Listen to these numbers, Don. Dallas-Fort Worth, change in population, 146,238 new people. Now, the next closest one to that is Houston at 94,000, which is 50,000 less. Then Atlanta at 89, which is 50,000 less. Then Phoenix at 88. And then from there, it drops down into the 60s for Washington and Seattle, into the 50s, and then into the 40s, the 30s, the 20s. In other words, there's only 4 cities in the country that are anywhere near 90 or above, right? Only 4. One of them's Houston, one of them's Atlanta, one of them's Phoenix, but only one. That's 150,000 people. That's a 50% increase from anybody else, even the best other 4 cities. What are you doing up there, Don?
Absolutely. I wish I could take credit for it, but actually it's just job creation. We got just a lot of jobs coming in. We've got some things that are still pending that Dallas-Fort Worth hasn't been awarded on yet. There's some big distribution centers that are coming into play. And, boy, it's this really exciting time up here. It's amazing how fast things are growing.
Where are you housing all those people, Don? Do you have...
I tell you, one thing that really put this into perspective, J.B. Durham has a way with numbers, as we all know. And he told me, I guess it was a couple years ago now, when they were projecting that this was going to happen to the DFW area, he said, think about it this way. If we were to take Oklahoma City and just shutter the whole town and move everyone to DFW, in 3 years, that's the impact it's going to have. And boy, that was a really good visual. Numbers have their own meaning, but boy, having something like that to model it out and put it in perspective, that's huge.
What kind of increases in rents are you seeing up there, Don? And what kind of occupancies are you seeing up there?
Well, occupancy across the board, definitely above 95%. I know our properties are running, I'm in Denton, and we're running 98 to 100. And I know the rules, if you're running that high, you need to be bumping the rents. But, the rents are moving so fast that when somebody who signed a lease a year ago, they may have skipped over like two rent increases. It's moving that fast. So, it's a challenge. But,
into that situation,
this is a good one.
When a lease has outlived two rent increases, when they come to that lease renewal, do you bump them both rent increases or you just do a partial one and do a nuisance increase? How are you dealing with that?
A lot of it just depends on, the unit condition. If we can get them out of there and maybe go in there and spruce things up and update the interiors and get $100-$150 bump in rent, we'll do that. But good residents have been in place for a while, and they don't cause problems. They pay their rent on time. We like to keep them in place, and we'll make every effort to keep it within their budget. But at some point, it just comes down to a business decision. But so far, so good. It's a great market. Just loving it.
As a general rule, if you can, share with us about how many different apartment projects are going on at the same time in the Dallas-Fort Worth area by Lifestyles members. In other words, where you're in the process of either looking at them, our letter of intent on them, contract on them, due diligence, closing, whatever.
Yeah.
What kind of volume?
Yeah, it's staggering. We had my weekly update that came through. Now, I'm not directly referring to Charles Ho, who's here also, but we divide the workload. And I think collectively we had just under 20 properties that were letter of intent or actually in contract. It's been the busiest that I've seen it since I've been on staff or even been a Lifestyles member as far as that goes. Deal flow is just incredible. And I think I've had two due diligences this week. So there's a lot of activity, a lot of first-time buyers, too, that really need some coaching and somebody to hold their hand, get them through the process. It's just real exciting to see. We forget what we know until we're asked certain questions. I'm like, I forgot that I knew that, but. I helped a guy the other day save about $50,000 going at a rehab item in a different way, and that's real energizing.
Just off the top of my head, I was thinking, I don't know the number, but let's say the average number of people in one of these syndicated deals is 25 people. And if you have 20 deals going on at any one time, which Houston, we're running average about 25 deals at a time. So you take 20 deals times 25, that's 500 people that are getting into a deal at this time. That's just an amazing number, and that's just Dallas. So if you talk about Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, and Austin, you talk about three times as much. That's 1,500 people that you are going to, within the next 45 to 90 days, impact their lives. Just a tremendous number, something we should all be proud of. Don, I want to thank you for coming on today. Appreciate your time. I know you're a busy man out there with your life and your wife and all the mentoring you're doing. So have a wonderful day. And the rest of you out there, remember this. It's not the money. It's the lifestyle. Have a wonderful day.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Walmsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Walmsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Walmsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Walmsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.